VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Entrepreneurs Exposed, the podcast where we speak with all kinds of founders and creators doing amazing things in business and beyond. Today is my chat with Andy Guttormson. Andy is the co-founder and CRO at Circle. He was on the founding team at Teachable, which was acquired for north of $250 million, and has subsequently gone on to co-found Circle, which kicked off back in 2020. Circle is now one of the world's leading community platforms for creators and businesses with customers like Adobe, Webflow, and thousands of others. On this episode, we talk about Andy's journey as a founder and entrepreneur. We dive deep into community, of course, and discuss best practices around cohort-based communities versus ongoing membership communities and the like. We also discuss how to best build a community business from scratch. We dive into data, trends, and findings from Circle's annual reports that dive into what makes an online community truly successful, and much, much more. So with that intro said and done, let's get to the show. Here is Circle's Andy Guttormson. You guys have had an incredible run, 10,000 plus customers, 120 team members at this point. You are post-Series A, you've raised $30+ million. Tiger Global and a number of other reputable investors on board. For you, what have you learned over the past few years building Circle from not only a team building perspective, but also from a venture capital perspective and a fundraising perspective?
Well, you know, it's funny, we started out and actually we were pretty against raising any money. You know, we were pretty tired. We'd just done 5 years of building another business and that business had been acquired. And we were like, man, what if we could just have a nice comm company for a little bit? And ultimately, what happened is that there was this big pull in the market for the business, for the product that we built, which is a community platform and software. And COVID kind of accelerated that, right? And so it was this moment in time where there was so much demand. And because of that, it was almost like a wake-up call. Do we use capital here to grow faster? And we decided to do that, but we put a lot of thought into it. And so we raised multiple rounds, right? So we started by raising a small pre-seed round, is about $700,000. Then we raised like a real seed round, which was $4 million.
What were those early discussions like when you and Sid and Rudy were chatting at Teachable and identifying this gap in the market that ultimately led to the early MVP of Circle? What was that gap in the market that you had identified?
You know, when you really deeply understand a certain type of customer, you can put yourself in their head. Both of them had also had the same experience, right? So like we skipped a whole lot of steps because we knew what the market needed. And, you know, what we realized was that there was this big gap of all the best courses out there, the best kind of membership experiences, the people who are building these great community experiences, like they're not using a lot of community tools when they're building courses, right? So for us, the wedge into the market was courses that want to have a community experience. So the Circle you know and see today, it wasn't that at the time. That wasn't even our plan. Our plan was to build this like little community experience that you could bring into a course. So let's say you had a course platform, you wanted community. None of the course platforms had community experiences. And so we would just say, hey, here's the tool. You can bring this into your own platform. And we knew that if we were able to make that super easy for folks, we knew there's 50 customers, 100 customers we can go and find. And so that was our approach. We were actually thinking much smaller at the time.
So you mentioned the courses being that initial anchor for a community bolt-on. I also am looking at these models as an outsider and thinking about the idea of the three C's, which is, you know, content, community, and coaching, let's say. And these can be different value propositions sold into the market. Were you banking on the weighted average flipping, meaning like community at some point would be the anchor benefit that draws people in, and then they could bolt on a course or they could bolt on some consulting or coaching after that? Or was your belief always that these folks will start with some kind of a course or a piece of content that they'll sell, and then eventually they'll want community? How are you thinking about it?
You know what? You just nailed it. That's exactly the way to describe it. Is it's almost like the center of gravity changed, where we originally thought you have a course, you bolt on community. Ultimately, though, people are building these community-first businesses. There's like been this big shift in the market, which is people build the community and then they sell additional products. They sell the coaching, they sell this course, then that course. The center of gravity is the community experience itself. And so eventually, and by the way, this is like 2-3 years and we built a course product and feature. We never had courses, right? We were bored of courses. We had done that for 5 years. Wanted to move on. So that's the big shift that happened.
At this point, though, the platform serves those who want to publish and host a course and then a community and then some coaching. It's sort of that one-stop shop.
Exactly. You might have this vision for the type of community experience you want. It might be all those things. And we just give you the building blocks and then you can kind of like put them together to kind of execute that vision. But you'll get all the credit.
So let me talk to you about some of the strategy behind building a community here, because I've heard you talk about and say that sometimes online communities can lead to ghost towns. So obviously the flip side of this is where community thrives and grows, and that's fantastic. That's where Circle comes in. But for those that want to understand where community fails, what does that look like?
The product has to be good. The community is a product, right? And so if we were to imagine what an actual community product is, let's use one of my favorite examples. So, you know, one of my favorite examples is Jay Klaus. So Jay Klaus has a community. It's called Creative Elements, Creator Science. And he literally caps it to 200 people, but his product is essentially you come in, you get access to a bunch of other entrepreneurs, live chats, and you can have coaching calls and get feedback on your work, connected with people, private messaging, all of that, right? It's like a product. There's signature gatherings in there, which are like, it's ways to deliver value to these folks. So really what you're doing is you're coming up with this product and the product has to be really good. You have to acquire the right types of customers, because if you acquire the wrong members, they're going to come in, they're not going to get value, and then it'll lead to the ghost town. And so very tactically, what I always recommend people do, especially for like the first 20, 30 members, is literally talk to every single one of them one-on-one. Have a really beautiful landing page that walks through the entire offer, what the community is. Maybe you have multiple tiers. Hop on with them though, vet them, because those founding members, those will be the people that really set the tone for this entire business, this entire community. And it's not about the first 30 members and the revenue they bring in. It's about like getting product market fit. Can I get community market fit with these folks? Because if I can deliver for these 30 people, I could probably deliver for a few hundred.
Do you think 30 is the right number for getting that initial data set to determine whether or not you have something sticky? Like, where does it tip?
So we have amazing communities that are like 15 people or 10 people. A lot of them are kind of, and look, we're calling them communities. I always call them coaching. It's like literally just coaching. It's like, the difference is it's not just one-on-one coaching. It might be one-on-one coaching with 12 people in the group and you unlock value between the folks that you're coaching, so that they can get value from each other. That's the community element. You can have a great business. There are communities that have 10 people in the community that pay $1,000 or $2,000 a month.
Yeah, I think that you just said something super insightful, which is that community, this idea of building community, is really sticky when the members can get value from one another, that it's not one directional. So yes, if I'm the anchor that draws people in, I can be that coach or that entrepreneur that's facilitating or moderating the community. But if I'm not bringing the right people into the room, they're going to churn, right? The stuff that happens in between is kind of like where the magic happens.
Totally. You know, something funny, and this isn't my idea at all. This is actually Jay's idea. Who's a Circle customer, but he caps out the number of members that he can have. There's only 200 slots in his community because he thinks that if he goes above and beyond that number, that it's potential that actually the quality of the community will decrease. He might not be able to deliver as much value. And so it's funny, like he was sharing with us that actually he has older members who have come in at a lower price point. Maybe they're not active. He will literally buy them out to open up a slot off of his wait list for a new member to come in. The other thing you'll see happen with, and by the way, this is really, it's a few thousand dollars a year, right? So that's a real business that he has from that one membership. But the other thing is the membership experience, it's two ways. It's a little bit different in that as a member, I'm buying access to this community, this product, but also I'm expected to deliver value when I come in. Like there's almost this like social contract of, hey, you're to come in, you're going to be, you know, an expert speaker one of these weeks because you know a lot about this thing. You're going to have to get feedback in this community. You're going to have to reply to people who like DM you. There's more to it than just spending out the money and joining the community.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you talk about cohort-based communities versus ongoing membership communities, what is the difference here? And then what insight can you offer in terms of like which model has been more successful over time?
An ongoing membership community is essentially, we have people who come in, they get value. There's not an end date to it, right? It could be monthly, annually. I'm coming in, I'm expecting to be there for a while, right? Oftentimes a year or longer. Whereas, you know, cohort communities, they're not as sexy out there, but actually I love cohort communities. I think they're the best because what a cohort community is, it's really, you have a group of people who are all starting on this one day together and we're going to go on this journey, this kind of like mission where we have some big outcome after 4 weeks or 6 months or one quarter or whatever it is. Whereas an ongoing membership is something that needs to be a topic where I can keep getting value over and over again. A good example there would be there's a parenting community on Circle, which is actually, it does 8 figures in revenue and super popular. But like I have a child, they're a baby, but they don't like just, I don't just stop parenting after, you know, they get to be 6 months old. There's the next version of that. So there's always new ways to deliver value to that group.
I would assume that creating these cohorts can be logistically complicated at times because you don't understand the demand side of the equation that well until you start putting the value proposition out there. And so you may get a yes. Like Andy might say, sure, I'll pay, you know, $150 a month to join today. And I'm like, oh, hold up, because we're starting this cohort, you know, in a month from now. Can you just hold on? And I got to make sure in the background that I have enough people that I can actually launch this cohort next month. And if I don't, then I've got to go back to you and be like, actually, Andy, we don't have a cohort for you, versus the ongoing rolling membership where anybody that says yes can just enter. How do you think about that issue? Or is it an issue?
I think it's counterintuitive, but actually, I think the cohorts are easier. The first time, yeah, you have to figure a whole lot out. The second time, you're figuring it out again. But actually, what happens is that you get really good at delivering that one cohort experience over and over again. In fact, you even get like alumni who are successful and they can come back and teach and you can elevate them. And so really, it's almost like that program is a product. It keeps getting better and better over time and actually gets way more efficient to market and sell it because you have all the assets, you've done the work. Now it's just about executing it. And so all of a sudden, the margins can get really big on the third cohort, the fourth cohort, the fifth cohort? Because you're just executing it now. You're not coming up with everything from scratch.
Someone shared with me recently that you did a 0-to-1 exercise with Sam Parr, something around how to build a community from scratch, like going from 0 to 1. So can we do this here? What are the first few steps?
Firstly, I just recommend people come up with a concept that you're actually like truly excited about, where you can fall in love with the customer and the problems that you're helping them solve. I'm going to give you an example, which is, so right now, you know, I spend so much time working, I don't have time for that many hobbies. And so it was really fun for me when I found this new hobby the last few weeks. It's a tool called Unreal Engine, which helps you, you know, build, it's almost like video game design with scenes for animations and things like that. And just fun to watch the tutorials and all of that, right? So if I were going to go out and create a community around that, let's say I'm really good at Unreal Engine, this tool, I know how to run it, and I want to find, create a community around it, I might just go out and figure out, all right, first of all, what is my actual offer here? Like, what are people going to learn from me? Let's say I'm really good at Unreal Engine. I'm going to help people. I'm going to give them some coaching. So maybe I can review the work they're doing. Maybe I can give them access to a private message, like DM area, where they can ask me questions or maybe other members questions. But I'm going to come up with signature gatherings. So we call these signature gatherings. This could be anything from each week I bring in an expert to teach on a topic, or maybe there's a book club and each week we get together, talk about a different chapter or whatever. Or maybe I can submit work and get feedback from other members of the group, and I can do that once a week. There could be accountability groups in there, right? Really common for like fitness and stuff like that. One of my favorite communities, it's a group of web designers. They quote their clients. And so they'll share their actual like quoting process, deals they're working on, and get feedback from other people in terms of like how to close the deal and that kind of stuff. But signature gatherings, I would figure out, what are my signature gatherings? And there might be 2, 3, 4 of them. And from there, I would go out and I would want to figure out, okay, who is this for? Is this the right offer, these signature gatherings, right? Like you talked about YPO earlier. Those community moments where they're bringing people together, different value pop, those are signature gatherings. It's bringing the people together. And I would figure out, okay, what are the signature gatherings that I'm going to offer? Are these valuable enough to support the business that I eventually want to build? It doesn't have to be right at the start, but like if I run a community for web designers that helps them close more clients, which this is a real community that we have on Circle, I could charge $2,000 or $3,000 a year for that easily. It's just one extra deal that that member gets by being part of my community is probably $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, right? And so I would think, does the value prop match how much I want to charge? And then I would go out and I would literally make a list of my initial members. Now, I think you should be able to make a list of like 20 or 30 people. If you can't make a list of 20 or 30 people, you probably shouldn't even start that community. And I would look at places like my LinkedIn. I'd literally look at my phone and figure out who I know in there, my contacts in this space. I would, you know, look on social. I would literally write one-on-one emails and texts to people, say, hey, I'm thinking about starting this thing. What do you think? Do you want to hop on a call? It's not scalable that way, but that's how I would have those first 10 or 20 conversations with folks. And I would learn so much in that process. And I would say, hey, we're going to do this. And I, you know, one of the things that's always nerve wracking is like, you launch a new product out into the world, it's pretty vulnerable. And what if people know it's like, you've never done this before, it's brand new. The thing is though, I just take all the pressure off myself. Like I would just tell them, this is brand new, you're doing this with me. Now, I'm not going to charge you very much for it. It'll be like half of what it's eventually going to cost. I'm going to give you lots of hands-on help and extra guidance here. But part of it's also, you're going to have to contribute in X, Y, and Z way as part of these signature gatherings and all that. I expect you to be active. We would be off to the races. And if I can prove that I give value to like 5 out of maybe 15 people that start in that first group, I've really got something.
That's a great approach. And in my experience, there's a couple of terms that I've used that are really disarming. So using the term beta or pilot is incredibly disarming. Like it takes all the pressure off. And when you invite someone into a beta, the expectation is immediately lowered. And people are attracted to the idea of being, you know, that first beta cohort that comes into a community. So that's pretty cool. I'm curious, like when you guys were pitching to VCs, How are you quantifying or talking about the demand side of community? And I ask this question because anecdotally, it feels like there's been a big shift, at least post-COVID. Like, how have you been thinking about it or studying the market?
The truth is, we were raising money at a time when our product velocity was really strong. We were landing a lot of big customers, and that was our big proof point. But I think what VCs care about is your ambitions for the business. How big can the business get? How quickly? And so when you think about Circle specifically, what we do, you know, we bring together community experiences, but specifically it's live streaming and, you know, live rooms, for instance, a lot of like Zoom-like experiences. It's online courses. It's real-time chat, you know, like Slack and Discord, all in one place. There's a lot of like marketing features and things like that. There's branded apps, like your own apps in the app store and all that kind of stuff. So actually, a lot of those businesses on their own, just as the point solutions, are like multi-billion dollar businesses, just courses. We didn't have to do that much convincing in terms of like the size of the market to justify the demand side. The other thing is like, when you look at what consumers expect, which I think is probably the most important thing, it's more so not that they want like communities over courses. It's actually, they just want like the community version of a course or the community version of an offline event. They also want to have like the online experience to go with it. It's more so just communities kind of being added to a lot of elements that maybe we wouldn't have traditionally referred to as like a community experience before.
It also feels just along these lines that the space, the actual space, has gotten really crowded and competitive in a short period of time. So you had, you know, the massive open online course platforms like Coursera, Udemy, Udacity. And then I'm thinking about, you know, course hosting platforms like Thinkific and Teachable, Kajabi. And then I think about your world, and I may have this totally wrong, but I think about, you know, you guys and then school and Mighty Networks, Slack, and even Facebook to some extent. How do you think about the competitor set? And how do you think about this space maturing?
It's funny, since day one, our biggest competition has been Facebook groups. Because if you think about it, Facebook groups, I think there are literally 700 million Facebook groups. So it's a huge, huge market. But in terms of, you know, the competition, first of all, I take competition pretty seriously. Like, a lot of folks say, oh, you know, we don't look at the competition. We don't care about the competition. No, we view it as a responsibility to understand, what do community builders want? What do they need? What is the current standard in the market? What's like the best version of this thing? We need to deliver that. And if we see a competitor that we think is actually beating us in a certain area, we are very honest with ourselves about it, and we address it, and we're realistic, and we say, let's go figure out how we can leapfrog them in this area. So we look at competition all the time.
Who is that that you think is beating you in a certain area? And in which capability are they one step ahead?
I'll give you an example, like Kajabi as an example. They have a lot of marketing features, like landing pages and things like that, email tools and all of that, that we don't have yet. So that would be a good example where, like, clearly our customers do a lot of marketing and they would like to have one tool. And so for us, it's constantly, hey, what does this look like, you know, at Circle in a year or 2 years from now?
I assume there's a direct correlation between marketing effectiveness and or audience size and course and community success, I would assume.
Not necessarily. In some cases, having a small community can actually be an advantage. Having 30 people you need to support really well can be way easier to do than having 3,000 or 30,000 members. It's way easier to have 30 people paying you $1,000 a month than it is to have 30,000 people, you know, paying you $10 a month. So I think it's more about building the type of community that you will enjoy doing, you know, the day-to-day work on. And like, just like, what are your broader business goals and all of that? Because, by the way, like, we have customers like with Webflow is a customer that they might have thousands of members but it's a product community. Whereas if you're a coach and you have 50 people in there, it's just a whole different ballgame. So it's not always apples to apples, obviously.
Is there a pricing sweet spot for a new founder who doesn't necessarily have a big personal brand that is starting to build a community? Say they've got that initial 30 yeses. How should they think about pricing?
So it's got to be enough that you can justify doing the work involved. Because starting a community is not easy. It's mostly worth it, but it's not easy. And so there's real work involved. You have to be able to sustain it. It also needs to be enough that that member is going to have skin in the game. And so I'll give you like a real example here. So like if I were to start a community helping go-to-market leaders of SaaS companies, you know, let's say that I was an executive, I didn't have a job. I decided, hey, I just want to actually start this community, run it as a business. And let's say I wanted to make $20,000 a month and that was going to be good for me, you know, doing this. And I might say, all right, I'm going to have 10 clients or, you know, 20 people paying $1,000 or $2,000 a month. These are executives, so I can help them. I can get good leverage, you know, with them. If I can help them, they can have really big impacts. And so I would keep it very small and simple to start. Like I wouldn't try and have it be this big thing.
I read somewhere that you guys surveyed 650 plus community builders talking about their businesses. Are there other data points or findings from that report that were surprising for you?
I think the thing that's surprising, not surprising to me, but I think it's a missed opportunity, is that, so if you look at a lot of the even really successful communities, these are really small teams. And even the successful communities at big companies, it's still small teams. So good news is you can run, you know, a really great community just yourself or with like one other person or some help. The missing opportunity though is that, you know, there's lots, like we have this tool called Workflows, which allows you to do all these automations and like save hours and hours every week. Community managers and the folks running it, like they need to do, I think, more education, like really understand like what's available and work smarter at times than like right now. I think there's a lot of like brute force happening and just like managing the communities on a day-to-day basis, where there needs to be more education around how to leverage technology, not replace the connection, but to enable more of the connection. I think that's a highlight for me there.
Let's pivot for a moment. So your own entrepreneurial experience, Andy, if I have my timeline right, this isn't your first rodeo. You had a startup back in 2012 called Explorious, I think is what it was called. Is there anything that you took away from that first founder experience into this one?
Yeah, a few things. So first of all, Explorious failed. It didn't work. I don't look back on it and think about how great of a win it was. I think a couple lessons. The first lesson is that in order to start a company and really have it have a high likelihood of success, you need to be running to that problem instead of like running away from some situation that you don't like. I just didn't really like my job. I had a job and then I didn't like it. I was like, I guess I got to start a company because I don't know. I want to get into tech. I don't know how to get into tech and all that. Nobody will take me, I'm sure. So I'll start a company. Dumb idea. But, you know, eventually I did go out and sold a lot of deals. So Explorious, we built apps that essentially you could go out as a zoo or a museum or aquarium and you could add like games and offer games at your zoo, museum, or aquarium for all of your guests that would come through. It'd be like a scavenger hunt and all that kind of stuff. Kind of like a fun idea, horrible business. But what it did kind of show me was that you can have a really bad, like strategy matters. I'd go in, I'd spend all this time like trying to sell a director of marketing at a zoo who has no incentive, like really to grow their revenue. Like it's a nonprofit and like, but yeah, it was a great experience though, in terms of like learning how to actually sell, you know, eating what you kill, all that kind of stuff.
With 150 or so people dispersed and remote, you yourself, are you based in New York City?
I actually moved out of New York City about a year ago to Pennsylvania. It's about an hour and 20 minutes out.
Why did you move out of New York?
Well, I'd been there for about 10 years. New York, I think, is like the best city in the world. I love it. I'll always love it. But my wife and I had just gotten married and my wife's whole family is out here. And also COVID happened and we kind of wanted a backyard And so we're like, oh, let's go get a house out in the burbs. And that's how we made the decision.
Is it hard to build a culture with a growing team when everyone is remote in different places? Have there been challenges around culture building?
I was so skeptical. This is actually a lot of the conversations we had when we were starting Circle. My co-founders, I was like, if we're going to be remote, like, how do we do this? Because I'd never done it before. And I really like being in person. At least I thought there's just a few things you have to nail when you're remote. You need to be pretty good at recruiting and hiring remotely. There's a lot of written communication. So we really hire for great writers. We over communicate a lot. I miss like celebrating together in the office, like when there's a big win. I also miss, you know, after hours, like after the day, like going out and getting a beer with, you know, people on the team, that kind of stuff. At the same time, something that has really happened at Circle is like, there's almost no drama. Like there's no gossip, like, cause we're all just showing up, you know, every day in the morning, and then we do our work and then we leave, you know, everybody's like very mature. So it's people who have opted into this culture. And at the same time, I personally get more done than I ever got done. I actually work more like this because I'm not commuting and all of that. So I'm truly giving like my best hours to Circle, you know, every single day.
And when you do want to celebrate the wins, do you guys do offsites and or how many times a year do you do offsites?
We do. So this is really important for us. So we do 2 offsites a year where we'll get the whole team together. And the way, kind of like the lens that my co-founders and I look through, and actually now the whole team, is when we get to the offsite, we want to feel like really proud, like we've earned it, because we've gone to like a beautiful palace in Tuscany together as a team. We've gone to Thailand, you know, we've gone to these really cool places, and we want to get there and be like really celebrating and proud of the work we did. Like, man, we really earned this. And that's important. Like if we miss that offsite, we feel it as a team. We have missed it before.
I should have called it onsite in your case. I just realized that.
That's right. That's true.
Given your remote model. Look, man, this has been a lot of fun. I've learned a lot. I think you guys are on your way. I mean, it's an incredible success story thus far. You guys are powering thousands of companies, among them some huge names, right? Adobe's a client, Webflow is a client, as you mentioned, Harvard alumni, 9,500 plus other companies on board already. What's the next chapter of Circle going to look like?
Well, there's really a few different things. One of them is we're expanding internationally, so we'll have more to say there soon. The other, you know, thing is that we're broadly expanding our feature set and our service area to help with things like, you know, marketing and all of that. And we'll have more to share there soon as well. But otherwise, we're just focused on, you know, listening to customers and talking to them all day and growing with them.
Andy, where do you want to point listeners to for more on Circle?
You know, you can just go to circle.so anytime. If you want to see our benchmark report, which is that 87-page report, kind of shows all the behind the scenes of the data from those 10,000 successful communities and what the top 10% communities are doing, we should have a link for that. Just Google Circle benchmark report. You'll find it. It's pretty cool.
Well, congrats to you, Sid and Rudy, for all the success thus far. And really appreciate the time, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Adam. Really appreciate you having me on. It's a lot of fun.
That's it for today. Thanks so much for listening. Entrepreneurs Exposed is brought to you by Scriberbase. Build your subscription business and thrive. More at scriberbase.com. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to download and subscribe wherever you get your audio. It helps our audience find us. You can also visit us at glow.fm/E2 to become a supporter. Until next time, make today count with whatever it is you're working on.
Welcome to Sara Talk Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned into a bit of a different type of show. I'm Sara B, and I'm your host. You can find me on my IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA. I talk about amazing, relevant conversations and topics and what functions that goes on in this magical, wonderful, wonderful city of the City of Angels. My IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.